Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slot. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
Social distancing, we're all about it. That's what we're all about right now. Scott Rintoul, Mick Nizar, he'll join me momentarily. Just getting him hooked up with the technology that we'll be using. Coming to you live from my home studio. That's what we're going to call it. I'm going to pretend that I have a home studio. For those of you who are just tuning in to Canuck Central, I just did the first 3 hours from here. It's technically a studio because I'm broadcasting from here, but it's not what you would consider a home studio. It's got its pros. I'm not sure how many cons. This is only day one. It's going okay so far. We're looking to hook up with Mick Nizar for Canucks Central. We'll talk about some hockey topics, and there's a couple of things to get into today. As you know, for the most part, with the league shut down, not a lot of developments. There's a roster freeze. We're also going to talk prospects, pardon me, at the bottom of this hour. Cam Robinson is going to join us, and we'll talk prospects with him. You hear him contribute on Sportsnet 650 for the last couple of years, and we'll talk to him about where Canucks prospects are at right now and if there's any more concern about any of them as a result of this stoppage or guys that maybe their development gets hurt more by this than others. So we'll get Cam Robinson's take on that. But there's some interesting audio that came down today as well. Bill Daly, Deputy Commissioner of the National Hockey League, was on with the Fan 590 in Toronto. You'll hear from him. The latest 31 Thoughts podcast dropped this morning as well. I haven't had a chance to listen to it, so I'll be hearing it in real time just like you. But my cohort, once we get him on the line, Mick Nizar, he's not there yet, is he, Justin? No, I don't think he is. Once we get Mick on the line, maybe he'll just be calling in. Maybe we'll get him hooked up via other technology. Mick has had a listen to the 31 Thoughts podcast this morning, and there are a couple of interesting nuggets on there about what this might mean for conditional draft picks moving forward. I think that has been a big question for hockey fans when they've taken a break from the everyday and our borders being further tightened and further restrictions with bars and restaurants and schools being closed and all of the actual real-life stuff that affects you day-to-day. When you've wanted to take a break as a hockey fan, you've looked for those different talking points, those different questions. And one of the questions people have, okay, conditional draft picks, what happens there? How does that compensation all work out? In the Canucks case, the one that everybody wants to know about is, all right, if there's no playoffs this year, how does the JT Miller first-rounder get sorted out? Now, the logic in me says, well, listen, you go based on points percentage in the standings. Not everybody played the same amount of games. So you go by points percentage. The Canucks, by points percentage, are in the top 16 teams of the league, which means they're not a lottery team, which means the New Jersey Devils, unless they traded away before that point in time, they get to select using the Canucks first rounder this year. That the deal ends up being done, and the Canucks won't be picking in the first round unless they somehow acquire one in the days leading up to a draft, whenever a draft might end up occurring. That's what the logic in me says. But I'm sure there's other ways you can slice it, and we will see. Is this a unique situation lottery-wise? Remember, we went through this once after a lockout. We had to go through this in the NHL, and I don't think they'll go to that because that year there was no hockey played. There was no basis, and they had to come up with a weighted formula based on where teams finished in the standings the year before and over the last 3 years and playoff appearances. And either got, for the simplicity of the argument, you got three balls, two balls, or one ball in the old ball hopper. I don't think they'll go to that, but do they have to come up with a unique system lottery-wise this year as a result? These are all things we're going to speculate on. We'll get some of the speculation from two of the best in the biz, Jeff Merrick and Elliot Friedman. But I believe we have Mick Nizar hooked up to the program now. Are you there, sir?
What's up?
How are you?
I'm psyched for this, man. This is going to be different and weird.
You're psyched for this or you're Skyped for this?
Both.
Yeah, you absolutely are. Hey, man, this is the most unique way we have ever done the program before. I'm a little disappointed in you. I'll say that right now.
Why, what's up?
I have not seen you tweet out a picture of your home, quote-unquote, studio.
Literally just hit send on it.
All right. Well, look, I don't have any time to be disappointing you. I tweeted out my surroundings right now for my home studio, at least one picture. Maybe as coming days go, I'll tweet out each view, like northwest, south, east, all of those different ones. So now I see you. All right, now I got
I very
you.
Strategically put it in a spot.
Cam
so
Chancellor.
I don't
Cam
know if I'm
going
to be as creative as you were.
What's the stick represent there? I see the Cam Chancellor photo up on the wall. What's the hockey stick?
The stick is from the 94 Canucks run. It's a game stick. I believe game two from Dana Murzyn.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah.
Good for you. Well, we're trying to give everybody a little taste of where we're coming to them from. This is a unique way for us to do the show today. Let's start with this Bill Daly clip, shall we, and chew on it for a minute. And then I want to get to those 31 Thoughts clips that you have cut that I have not yet heard, but our audience can react to as well. Bill Daly was on the Fan 590 this morning and was asked by Ben Ennis and Justin Bourne, what does the day-to-day look like for you right now?
Well, there's certainly a segment of our work staff that have been working feverishly on different scenarios. But a lot of that is really just understanding all what our options are. You know, there are so many different variables. You know, we're only 6 days into having paused the season. We don't really have a good understanding of when we can come back and what format would be able to come back. There are network partner obligations that we have to be cognizant of. There are building availability issues that we have to be cognizant of. There are seasonal issues that we have to be cognizant of. So there's a lot of unknowns and variables. So I think the process at this point is really just understanding what's possible and, you know, maybe kicking around ideas as to kind of what would be fair and what would have some integrity. Basically it's nothing more than that at this point. I wouldn't call it spitballing, but it's kind of like that. And then with respect to the other, you know, my time is primarily making sure we have all the information from a medical standpoint about what's going on, having all the information on what's going on a club-by-club basis and club personnel basis and within the NHL community. And quite frankly, you know, staying in touch and making sure we're sharing information with all the clubs. So to this point, it's been a full-time job for sure.
So there are the variables that they're considering. Then there are the realistic ones they are handed. Bic, the meat of that comment to me had to do with two words, fair and integrity. When they are looking at all the possible scenarios that could unfold and all the different speculative proposals there are out there right now, those are the two things they always have to circle back to. Okay, what comes across as fair for our member clubs if we are able to start up at any point in time? And how do we maintain the integrity of what this league has built in awarding this cup over the existence of the NHL?
Yeah, I do feel like it's tough too because there's no bad ideas right now, right? But fair and integrity, you're right, is the right way to go about this. It's going to be so tough to figure out what's fair, especially when you consider, okay, well, we're sitting here in this market of we're talking about point percentage and all of that, and are the Canucks in or are the Canucks out? But you know, what seems fair to you? Is best of three fair? Is whatever going down the road is a single a knockout fair? I don't know if there's ever going to be a good solution because there's always going to be critics of whatever solution they come up to.
Well, see, that's where I, like when you suggest something like single elimination, that's where I say, no, that's not integrity as far as this tournament goes to me. And everybody will have their different opinions. I don't see a single game knockout if you're going to a tournament style or a playoff style format. I don't see single elimination as being fair. Three games? Yeah, I can see that because what were there? Anywhere between 13 and 10 games left in the regular season, depending on which team we're talking about. So, yeah, we're shortening it down. But those teams, for the most part, we're going to have to play themselves in. I think the fair question is a tough one to determine. And that's where there's this sliding scale from my vantage point. So let's just say we work with the Chris Johnston proposal, which he admitted isn't anything set in stone. It's just a proposal. It's an idea. Just take it and run with it. What do you like? What do you don't? There are going to be teams that are just outside of that top eight teams that would get a first round bye in that style of format that say, hold on a second here. We're basically entrenched in this dance. Like, there was virtually no way for us to fall out. And you're telling me we have to play our way in. And yet at the same time, a team like the Arizona Coyotes get a chance when it looked like they didn't look like they had much of a shot. So there's always going to be somebody complaining about fair. And that's where at some point you're going to just have to realize not everybody's happy if you're able to start up again.
I feel like a bye scenario for what, the top four teams, is that fair?
Where that's not enough for me. That's not enough for me.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, how many is enough for you, roughly?
Well, eight seemed like from a buy standpoint, eight was a pretty good number for me. And again, sometimes it has to be
four
the math
from each
working.
Conference.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant four overall.
No. Four from each conference.
Yep, I can
live
with that.
So that would be what? Boston, Tampa, Washington, Philly, and then St. Louis, Colorado, Vegas, Edmonton. So two from each division.
Yep. And again, I can totally see that. But I can also see why a team like the Pittsburgh Penguins goes, hey, man, we're only 3 points back of the Flyers. What do you mean?
Yeah, but you could play that game in every division. Calgary's four back with one game in hand. Toronto is 11 back. Never mind.
I agree with you. Like, for me, eight teams would be fine. But my point is there are going to be teams that argue no matter what happens here.
Oh, of course. And fans alike as well. And that's just the reality. Like, we have to accept the situation that we're in. I'm broadcasting from home right now, right? We have to accept the realities that we're in nowadays. And I understand that people are going to get angry about it, but we have to move on and understand that this is about something bigger than trying to necessarily stay true to what we've always done.
Yeah, and it's going to be unique. It's going to be creative, and I'm all here for that, because if they ever get back to one of these formats that is out there, or something that's a hybrid of that, Bic, one of the things that can come from it is a new idea that never would have been tested before, and how does it go? And does that change the way we do things moving forward? Look, when I was growing up, best of five in the first round. There was best of three before that. Things change. Things evolve over time. It doesn't always have to be the same to be fair and to maintain integrity. So that's something I think that can come out of this. You had the opportunity to listen to the 31 Thoughts podcast this morning. A lot of people probably took the time to do that as well, or will at some point during today or the next couple of days. And one of the things we've been speculating on, and a lot of people around hockey have been speculating on, and our listeners, quite frankly, have questions on, has to do with conditional draft picks. Here's what Jeff Merrick and Elliot Friedman had to say on that subject.
For teams that made trades with conditional picks.
Yes, this is a good question.
Based on teams going, you know, one round in the playoffs, second round, semifinal, getting to the Stanley Cup. How is that going to be determined now, or is that all going to be pushed to next season? Do we know?
I have looked into this, and I've been told that, first of all, the NHL recognizes, and the Players Association, they're almost certainly going to need to rework the critical dates calendar. Like, for example, June 1st, Scott Perunovich, for example, he has to sign by June 1st, or technically he becomes a free agent. He's a St. Louis Blues former first-round draft pick who's playing college hockey. All of this could change. For example, the July 1st free agency, that could change. All of this stuff is probably going to be changing in terms of who, what, when, where. Also, if we do have playoffs that go into July, what about coaches and players whose contracts are up on June 30th? All of this is going to have to be reworked. Now, one of the things that I asked about that with is, for example, if you're a Wild fan or a Pittsburgh fan, the Zucker trade has that condition in it. If you're a Calgary fan or an Edmonton fan, the whole Lucic-Neal, who scores how many goals, does Calgary get the third round pick? All of that is in it. And at this point in time, I've been told that it will depend on what the conclusion of the season ultimately looks like, that they'll sit down and figure out all of those issues.
That doesn't come across as surprising to me, that this imagined season and these imagined dates on the calendar, Bick, it's just at this point a series of if-when statements. If we're able to do this by then, when can we do that? That's all this is to me.
Yeah, for sure. And that's always what it was going to be. But it's nice to see that these questions have already been asked at the league office, right? So they've done the immediate thing necessary. Player safety, get all the teams pushed back to their own cities. But here now you're talking about some of the issues that are going to come forward as far as conditional picks, right? So it's an idea that these discussions are being had at the league office. And when you think about, okay, what's getting unpacked there, it feels like they will have a resolution. It's just a matter of how long till we get to that spot.
Well, and this is one of those examples that I think we can relate to if we use something tangible. So let's use the draft. Fans in Vancouver are very familiar with this draft process, or the lottery for that matter. They become accustomed to it, and they're hoping not to be this year. So let's use that. And people have said, well, I could see a situation where the draft actually happens before the season plays out if they do that in the summer. Well, you can't do that because the entire seeding of the draft depends on how the playoffs go and what the point totals are. And if you play this hybrid tournament and a team that didn't have a great point total ends up going to the conference final in this format, where do they pick relative to where they would have picked in another year? So it's an if-when statement to me. Well, if we're able to do this tournament, then we have to push the draft back to, let's say, September. Now, if we're not able to do this tournament this summer or play out the regular season in any way, shape, or form, well, now we'll hold the draft at the regular time, and maybe that'll be video conferencing, but here's how we're going to lay out the order in that scenario. And that's just one example, but that, to me, is how this thing is going to have to work the entire way, and you're going to have to play out. It's almost like a choose-your-own-adventure. Like, if we get
yeah,
to this...
great example.
If we get to this chapter, here's what's going to happen. But we may never get to that chapter, and if we go the other way, here's what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I'm here for all the things, and whatever path we go down, what's fascinating about this is there's always going to be pros and cons to every situation, right? As we were just talking about the playoff scenario, but as we go through this, we'll get more definitive answers moving forward, right? Like, we want certainty right now, but I don't know what we're doing tomorrow, Scott. And I understand people want answers to these questions, but these are some of the outline steps, and we're just trying to provide guidelines right now to what it might look like weeks and months down the road.
I want to move on to this second clip as well, because you know this one's of much interest in Vancouver, so
yes.
I'm not surprised you had this clip cut for this program. And the subject is the collective bargaining agreement and compliance buyouts, what the possibilities are for those this summer. Here's what American Friedman had to say on that.
But there were some belief that just the whole uncertainty, even though the NFL seems to be everything proof, just the uncertainty of where we're going, some people voted yes. And I just wonder if the league and the players say, okay, this really hammered us here. We have a conversation about the cap. We have a conversation about escrow. Because I think the players understand that the way the deal is done, it's got to be paid. You can't just say, make us forsake it, because the insurance, from what I understand on the league's point of view, is not going to be enough to cover for the losses if the playoffs go away. So I think the players know it's not like this can go anywhere. If you do a CBA with cap, maybe done for a couple years, escrow done for a couple of years, Olympics and an extension, I think there's going to be a willingness to at least converse here and see if they can do it. I'll tell you this, though, Jeff. One thing that a couple guys did say to me, they wonder if there's going to have to be, and I don't know the answer to this. I'm just telling you it's out there. I'm not telling you it's true. I'm just telling you it's what I heard. There are some people worried if there might have to be compliance buyouts as part of this.
Well, and that is of particular interest in Vancouver for one contract, right, Bick?
Absolutely, and it's Louis Erickson's contract, obviously. But just think of everything they got unpacked there, right? We're in these creative times, and you might have to make sacrifices, both from the player's point of view when it comes to the CBA, to say, how do we maximize revenue for the league? And if you have to be flexible and creative to come up with some ideas to avoid something like, hey, compliance buyouts, this is something that players are going to have to concede, owners are going to have to concede something, fans are going to have to concede something. We have to come to terms with the idea that this is not going to look normal for, what, a year?
Maybe even longer.
Maybe more?
Who knows what that is? And I think we should couple this with what Friedman said on Tim and Sid yesterday, where he said, look, I think the league will do everything in its power to have the salary cap ceiling come in around 81.5, which it was this year. Whether that's artificially inflated or not, it makes sense to do that, because if you just base it on hockey-related revenues, and you and I have speculated on this before, the most logical thing to do is say, look, we're going to leave the cap about the same, because then you guys at least have the current landscape and your contracts fall under that landscape, and that's what we can use at least for next season. So if that's what they do, then you don't have to worry about mass buyouts all over the place, because if the salary cap drops by $20 million, well, nobody can get under it. There might be the odd team, and they might be happy about that, but for the most part, nobody can get under that. So now you're buying out all of these players. Now you've got mass free agency, but you've got no room to sign these guys. So it doesn't make sense for the chaos of the league. But you're right. They may have to introduce a measure that says, okay, not only are we going to artificially set the cap here, because that's what we did before when we went through the lockout shortened season in 2012-2013. But we're also going to provide this one-time relief buyout so that we can also conduct business. And the NFL reference off the top makes a lot of sense. Part of the reason that the Ryan Tannehill contract, for example, wasn't done as soon as it was is because teams wanted to know, what is the salary cap going to look like? And if we have a CBA in place, if we have labor peace for the next 10 years, well, now we have a frame of reference for how much cap we can commit to a particular player, or how much money we realistically feel we have to spend in free agency as we start to make our cap go forward. And the NHL GMs are going to want some type of certainty on that as well.
Yeah, and especially, like, what if we get to a scenario where we're not playing all summer, right? And you start coming up with creative solutions that, okay, do you hand out the Stanley Cup in September, right? There's going to be a quick turnaround then from the end of, quote-unquote, this season to the start of next season. Free agency, draft, all of that is going to be expedited. And you're going to need breathing room for exactly what you're talking about, Scott.
I thought Friedman made a really good point yesterday when he was talking to you guys, saying that, look, with the postponement of other events, the NHL needs to be conscious of this to a certain degree, whether it's the French Open or some of the golf events that have been pushed back, a number of the leagues that may get pushed back as well. And so all of a sudden, like, you start to look around, Bick, and you see, like, September is loading up. Let's say that by September, we can have some form of normalcy with the sports that are supposed to start then, starting then. Let's just hypothetically say that. So that means the NFL is starting up. College football is starting up. Depending on what the NHL and NBA do, their seasons shortly thereafter would get going. But now you've got the French Open, and you've got big golf events that are going down right now. And all of these different sports that are coming together, and you're going, okay, can we really compete with all of this right now? So if we
is it fair to be worried about that?
Well, and again, I think that's a valid question to ask. So
the only relationship I think they should be worried about is their TV partners, right? Because if say NBCSN or here Rogers in Canada, there isn't space to put it on because of all this conflicting content, then okay, I understand. Maybe you can find a right date for it, and that's also the thing to worry about with the Olympics is. Friedman had a great quote about it yesterday, if they're running from July 24th through August 9th. But if you can't organize a deal with your TV partners to get your content out, well, then, okay, that's a bigger deal. I'd be less worried about the fans wanting to jump on board with your product.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, but I also think there's part where there's going to be a gap. And so how big is that gap? And when does that gap occur? So are you better off to say, okay, we couldn't hand out a Stanley Cup this year, but we're not used to having hockey programming in the summer anyway. This way we get everybody a fresh run at it, and they get to put their programming in place on their respective networks where they would have, starting in October. Or do you say, look, we're going to uphold the last part of the deal, which was playoffs on your network, and we know people will gravitate to it in the summer. Are they going to gravitate to it the same way in September? And what do the networks have to say about that? Guys, sorry, we don't want all of that, depending on whether we're talking Canadian or American broadcast networks. Or do they say, yeah, we'll take it. You guys owe us that from last season. You're right. A lot of it will depend on the broadcast, but the broadcast to a certain extent depends on eyeballs.
Yeah, I guess what are I suppose they're competing with like the reality TV shows and sitcoms and whatnot as well, not just the other sports.
Yeah, again,
like,
that's part
NBC's of it. Running programming for like This Is Us or whatever.
Sure,
are they going to want to defer to NHL round one playoffs?
Maybe not, but we don't even know when baseball is starting, for example. So now, yeah. If the baseball season goes further into the fall, or it gets compacted, and you're playing more games, like how does that affect all of it? There are a lot of complex conversations that need to take place here, and it all comes back to this point of no return, which we have no idea that they're trying to come up with right now, and whether or not those factors you and I just discussed with broadcasts or competition, how much those affect that point of no return date from the league's perspective and from their partner's perspective.
Yeah. And look, this is what, day six, day seven of this. But it feels like, as I was alluding to earlier, like these are the questions that are now being asked. We're past a certain phase where now you could start focusing on the logistics of what the next potential back end of the season looks like. Whereas if we're talking, 4 days ago, we were just trying to get players home and make sure everyone's safe.
It's a fair point. A week ago is the last time an NHL game was played. A week ago tonight, Oilers, Jets. It seems
the
like
last Canucks game was a week ago, right?
A week and a day ago. Yeah, a week ago yesterday. It was the telethon.
Yeah.
That's the last game the Canucks may play this entire season. Who knows? As mentioned tonight, a week. And what does it feel like? Does it feel like it's been a month? It does to me.
At least six.
Yeah, it feels like forever. Not just because, oh, man, I'm jonesing for hockey. Just all of the information as citizens we've been processing over the last week. It has little to do with, oh, man, I need to see a live hockey game, and a lot more to do with, man, life has changed substantially in the past 7 days. How has life changed for a number of the Canucks prospects? We will find out next. One of our favorites, Cam Robinson, joins us here on Canucks Central on your home of Vancouver hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
That actually might be welcome, with all due respect to our next guest. What if his better half came on? Mrs. Robinson instead of Mr. Robinson. Who knows? Who knows who will get on the phone? Scott Rinto with you. Bick Nazar, he's in Coquitlam. I'm in North Vancouver. We're all here together on Sportsnet 650. What do you think? Should we just tell Cam to throw his missus on the phone?
Where do we think he gets all his draft insight?
That would be great. Imagine that, just finding out, like, he's just the hair behind this entire profile. That
the
he's
voice
just,
and the hair.
Yeah, exactly. He's basically the Zoolander. Like, he's just the guy we trot out. But you know what? The plan is being formulated somewhere. That would be great. I would love that. If Cam Robinson pulls back the curtain on that today, that will be fantastic stuff for me. And we can ask
That's
so
what
many
we're
questions.
Here for when it comes to draft coverage, right? It's the Cam Robinson school of people who scout good. I forgot what the Derek Zoolander school was.
Oh yeah, that would be great. What is this? A school for ants? Love it.
So it's the Derek Zoolander Center for kids who can't read good and want to learn to do other good stuff too.
Yes.
So it'd be the Cam Robinson Center for fans who want to scout good and learn to do other good stuff too.
Yeah, let's make that happen. Let's see if we can do it. And again, I don't care who comes up with the draft information. Like Vin Scully, he did all his broadcasts by himself. But, you know, as the years went on, he had all those people grabbing facts for him during the course of a game. They're behind the scenes. And, again, maybe Cam is just the Vin Scully of prospect talk when he joins us. Is he on the line now, Justin? Not yet? Okay, we'll have him here in just 1 second. Scott Rintoul, Vic Nizar, talking Canucks, talking hockey, even though there's not a lot of hockey to talk right now. Some interesting stuff from John Tortorella earlier today. And, Vic, I know this, we're probably not going to get to flesh this out completely. Maybe we can tackle it again tomorrow. The question was asked of him, is this your best coaching job ever? Now, they haven't won anything. They weren't destined to go to the playoffs. They were on the cusp of it. This is a guy who's won a Stanley Cup. This is a guy who's had deep playoff runs in the past. What do you think of the thought that this might be the best John Tortorella has ever been in the National Hockey League?
Well, he's won a Stanley Cup. Do we put that up against it?
Well, and again, I think it was because of the expectation, and there he had star power in Tampa. We'll save that thought for a little bit later. We've got Cam Robinson on the line now to talk a little prospects with us here. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well, boys. How are you doing?
We're good, and you know what? It's great that you answered and all, but you know, Justin played Mrs. Robinson coming in. We thought we might get to talk to your better half.
You know what? She actually took off with my cell phone a little while ago, and I was like, she might be on the radio here today. It might have worked out, but got the phone back in time.
How does that happen? How does she hijack your cell phone?
Her phone was using for some sounds for the baby to nap with, some white noise. So she
very nice
and took off. Yeah.
And as a father,
how are you dealing
understand
with the whole world right now?
What's that?
Well, you know, the whole situation in the world right now. How is quarantining, self isolation, social distancing going for you?
Yeah, it's going pretty well over here. We're actually I'm staying with my folks for a couple of days. We live on a pretty remote island, so we came over to get some stock up on some last goods before heading back, and help my old man tear up a deck and do a little building. So we've been keeping it close to home, but I did brave Costco a few days ago with, you know, everyone keeping their distance and giving everyone the stink eye if they're getting a little too close. But got all the supplies now, and we'll head back tomorrow and really, really kind of hunker down.
I love that you are actually doing a rebuild. It happens to be of a deck. But the prospect guy is doing a rebuild. That is fantastic. Cam Robinson joining us here. I don't know that this affects any one prospect or group of prospects more than any other, but probably a fair question to ask right now. With seasons being shut down and leagues being shut down, do you see any Canucks prospects out there that have their development hindered more than others?
I don't think so. I think once you're drafted and you're in the system, and, you know, we played – however, depending on the league that they're in, if they're over in Europe, you know, most of their seasons were either wrapping up or, you know, had already ended if they didn't make the playoffs sort of thing. So they're not missing too much. You know, obviously, you know, some of these kids that maybe would have got a chance to play the World Championships, that would have been a big experience for them. You know, CHL kids maybe getting a chance to play the Memorial Cup, obviously a big experience too, and some chance for growth and get on the big stage. My heart goes out for, you know, the guys that are 20-year-olds and junior and this is the end for them, or the ones that are fourth-year university players and they didn't get their seniors night, they didn't get to go out on a bang sort of thing. And then obviously the draft-eligible players that are missing out on several big opportunities to showcase their stuff in front of all the scouts and the GMs, you know, the Memorial Cup, the World Under-18s, and stuff like that. They probably won't have a draft combine. You know, even questionable whether we're going to have an actual live draft or they're going to get their chance to come up on stage and get their picture taken. So, you know, I think the kids that are already drafted and in the systems, this isn't a huge loss for them, but some of those other ones are.
It's interesting when you mention it that way, and it's something I hadn't thought about before, but we always try to take bias out of things, especially when you're being as objective as possible. And yes, there's a subjectivity that's going to come with picking prospects and projecting forward. But I guess this is the real test with all of this stuff being shut down, Cam, of you're not going to have the ability to take a small sample size, just a played so big on the big stage component into this year's draft, where in years past a guy might vault up simply because he was in the Memorial Cup or he did do something on a bigger stage than perhaps the 6 or 8 months that led up to the draft might have indicated.
No, you're absolutely right. And recency bias, it plays a role even with executives in the NHL, especially for some of these GMs that maybe don't get out to scout much during the year. But then, you know, the Mem Cup happens, maybe the NHL season's done, or the under-18s, and they go out and they get a chance, you know, like for Jim Benning, who used to be a scout himself. I'm sure he relishes getting out to some of these later events and getting a chance to really see some of these kids and on a big stage. against difficult competition, and they might make an impression that that's going to last with those executives that are watching versus some of the scouts that have been watching them all year. And also, you know, we're trying to see these developmental arcs progress upwards. So, you know, you watch them September, October, November, and you want to see that improvement as we're coming up to March, April, May. You know, you want to look for a kid that's really bolting upwards versus someone who maybe started strong and then things are plateauing or, you know, slowing the curve, bending the curve, if you will. But, yeah, so it is. It's going to be difficult for some of these guys, and you know, for someone like me who does the vast majority of my scouting through film, not a big change for me. I get to go back and watch some of the old games that I maybe didn't get a chance to. But for a lot of these scouts that live in the rink and are now forced to sit down in front of the computer and try to do some of their old work, I'm sure it's a bit more challenging.
Well, what's fascinating about that is, so general managers aren't going to get the opportunity to have immediate interaction with these players because there's no draft visit, there's no combine or any of that. And so now we go to you're basically relying on your scouts for personal character information. But more importantly, we're going to live in a world where everyone's going to have to do exactly what you're talking about, Cam, for similar to you, is you're going to have to live and die by the tape for this upcoming draft process.
Yeah, absolutely, and it will be, especially for some of these old school guys. That is going to be a big challenge. A lot of organizations already do implement some video analysis and some scouting through film. Some clubs more than others, and so those ones that are, you know, strongly based in person viewings, which provide obviously a ton of information, and you get to know the character of some of these kids by going down to the room and chatting with them afterwards. You're going to have to rely on everything you saw early on in the year. And then, you know, I'm sure they'll get creative. Maybe they Skype in to do their draft interviews or something like that, too. Mm-hmm. So the GMs will probably get a chance to have a little back and forth with some of these guys, especially teams that are picking early, that, you know, some of these decisions will impact their franchise for decades. And, you know, Vancouver, we're not sure how everything's going to play out with their conditional first rounder this year, but they might not be picking until, you know, the third round. So it wouldn't be as integral for them to get down and chat with some of these kids.
Well, let's get some of the players, and we'll start within the Canucks as well. Obviously, the guy everyone wants to keep an eye on is Vasily Podkolzin, the most recent pick. What have you noticed as his season has progressed? Obviously, he's been getting more ice time and more games in general. Has that been reflected in how his season has progressed, that he is clearly growing and has earned those moments?
Absolutely, and I know there's a lot of hand-wringing going on in Vancouver early on in the season when, you know, you knew you weren't getting this player for two seasons, and you basically had no say in how he was going to be handled and developed over there in Russia. And so, you know, sitting on the bench for an entire game and getting no ice as the 13th forward, or you know, seeing 3 minutes in the first period and then not again for the rest of the time. And so there was some concern there, but I tried to be the voice of reason a little bit, and that he was a young 18-year-old playing in the second best league in the world. And you know, nothing is given in that league, especially when you're playing on a top team like SKA. And so he put in the work. You know, he bounced up and down between the VHL, their second tier there, played a little in the MHL too. And when he was in the lower tiers, he was playing the top 6 minutes. He was producing shots. He was getting a few points. Then he went to the World Juniors, and he found a lot of chemistry with Kirill Marchenko, who's a Columbus Blue Jackets prospect, and Ivan Brozov, who's a Las Vegas prospect. And they came back, and they're all part of SKA's system. And for early on in the year, they're basically picking either Marchenko or Podkolzin to be up with the big club, and then they'd swap them back and forth sort of thing. And they, coming out of that tournament, they brought all three up, and they put them together as a kind of a fun offensive fourth line. And it really changed the complexion of their forward corps, and those guys really started to get rolling. And you could see the confidence building, especially with Podkolzin too. And so he found his sea legs. He was driving play. He was getting more shots. He was getting more opportunities. And then kind of the dam burst, and the points started to follow. So at the time of when season hasn't been suspended yet, but, you know, teams are pulling out of the KHL playoffs right now, so they're just kind of sitting in limbo. You know, he has 3 points in four playoff games. I believe he had something like 12 points in the 16 games before the break here. So he was definitely producing at a good clip in a very, very good league. And so we can only expect that that's going to continue next year too, and his role will elevate, as will Marchenko's, as will Morozov. You know, maybe all of a sudden they become the fun third line with some more first power play opportunities as they kind of lose some of their top players as the KHL often move around a little bit. So I think that his path is trending exactly the way you want it. He's going to be an impactful player for the Canucks. You know, arguably he'll slide into a top nine role as soon as he crosses. And he has that defensive responsibility that's going to allow Travis Green to really trust him immediately. And, you know, maybe the points don't come right off the hop, but he will. He always drives play. He always plays hard. He, you know, goes to the net. He's physical. And then that two-way game is already very polished. So I think that he's on the right track.
We came up with a lot of player comps stylistically for him. And, you know, defensive style wingers is a lot what was comped. But production-wise, as you were saying there, that the dam kind of burst, what kind of productive comp can you come up with? Is he going to be a high-volume shooter? Is he going to a lot of chances created, and that's how he's going to create? How production-wise, is there a comp for him?
I mean, he's a fairly unique player. I think that he's... he's not a highlight reel guy, and I don't expect him to put up big, gaudy point totals. I expect him to be just a do-everything, hard to play against, hard to match up against type of guy who could, you know, arguably play at a Selke level defensive style as a winger, which we don't see too often in the NHL. So, you know, if he turns into a player that can get you 25 goals and 60 points while bringing that high level of physicality and defensive play, I think that's kind of a high end for him. Maybe a 70 point player. I don't see him being this 90-100 point guy. I just don't think that the offensive creativity is necessarily there for that to happen, and also that he tends to lean to be on the safer side of things. He's, you know, never blowing the zone. He's always in the right position defensively, and he, arguably to his detriment production-wise sometimes, where he stays high and he won't commit if he sees one of his wingers or his centers already down low, that he'll make sure that he's on the right side of things. So I think that will translate up with him too, that responsibility and that mentality. So, you know, stylistically, I see him as being, you know, a high-end second-line production type of guy, or maybe a low-end first-line production.
Cam Robinson, prospects analyst, Dauber Hockey, joins us here, Elite Prospects as well. He joins us this morning, or this afternoon, I should say, on Canuck Central. We could run the gamut and just ask you about each individual prospect, but I'm curious to know who you think, which prospect has made the biggest strides this season to date.
Can I say Tyler Madden?
Of course you can.
Well, if you'd asked me that a month ago, I would have said Tyler Madden. But, you know, I think I'd probably have to say Cole Lind. Has his kind of rejuvenation in the American League as a second-year player has been fun to watch, because he struggled last year, and it was kind of twofold. He was struggling to keep up, and then he was struggling to find his confidence once he kind of caught up to speed a little bit there. So at the tail end of last year, he found himself a home kind of in the third, fourth line with some veteran players, and, you know, you could see that they weren't expecting him to produce. They were expecting him to play the right way, and he started to get those habits in the American League, which is a difficult league to score in. It's tight checking. You know, you're playing against guys that are, you know, a whisker away from the NHL. And then this year, the expectations were risen, and as was his deployment. So he was putting in the top six. He was put with, you know, centers who could create plays. He himself was exhibiting more confidence, and he was creating plays. And so, you know, to put up whatever he put up, 45 points in 60 games before the break here, that's top six for under 22 skaters. So he's definitely producing at a rate that you expect to see from a future top nine NHL forward. And for me, I think that those strides, as a big body kid who has shown the ability in the past to be able to convert from out high, likes to mix it up a little bit physically, will get into the kind of dirty home plate areas and jam away too. So he's a really interesting player that I think he could kind of be a jack of all trades. You know, maybe you slide him into your top line when there's an injury and he can be there and play that same role. But more realistically, he's going to kind of be a matchup player on a third line who can still chip in some goals and with some creativity, some offense. So for me, it's Cole Lind. And then on the back end, it's probably going to be Jack Rathbone. I think the world of Rathbone. I think his skills are undervalued in the kind of general population at this point because they haven't had a chance to see him, just kind of slaving away there with Harvard where they don't play a ton of games. And not all of them are televised. So I think that people are going to be very excited to see if and when he does turn pro and he comes into the organization. That, you know, I had a prediction a couple months ago that if he does turn pro and comes to camp next year, that he's going to make it very difficult for the Canucks to send him down to Utica.
A guy I didn't hear there is named Jet Wu, and he's in the next draft class, of course, from Jack Rathbone. What improvements have you seen him make over the last couple of seasons?
Well, you know, offensively, last year was kind of the big breakout season for him, and it was kind of part and parcel with his situation playing for the Warriors. It was a very offensive team, and he got to chew up all the big minutes offensively. So on that top power play unit, he was always jumping over the boards with the first line there with the Warriors, and consequently, he put up over a point a game. And so now this year, coming into his fourth and final WHL season, expectations were risen even further. But if you ask Jet, and if you watched him play his entire WHL career, is that he fancies himself a shutdown defenseman first and foremost. And so the points last year, that gaudy point total, they were nice, but his kind of robust style of play was there as well. And so he was, you know, still getting the penalty minutes, still stepping up and laying the boom in the open ice hits. And then this year, with the transition to the Calgary Hitmen, I think that was a difficult transition as he came in. He wasn't hand-wrapped that top power play unit, and so he was kind of more of a secondary offensive player, and the reins were put on him a little bit not to jump, that he was asked to be kind of that steadying presence on the back end, on the second pairing, and I think that works well for his game. And, you know, we saw a stretch there in the middle of the season where the points started to come, and they stayed kind of rolling a little bit through the end of the year, and he's finished up here with 46 and 64, which is a good season. Again, the penalty minutes went up, so he wasn't afraid to be physical. I think that he's going to see a similar transition to the American League as Cole Lynn did. So it's going to be an adjustment for him next season. He'll still have that physical play, and hopefully the defensive aspect of his game transitions nicely, and he can be put into kind of a third pairing role and be looked at to be responsible and to get the puck up and out in a hurry. And then you can look at year two when he's in the American League to maybe we start to see some offensive opportunities. But long term, I think his role will be that shutdown style to bring a physical element. And then, you know, if he can chip in with a few points, that'll be nice too.
You mentioned, Cam, that, okay, yes, the Canucks may not have a first-round pick, but look, there's options for them to be aggressive in the offseason to maybe get a recuper pick back, right? If they do, one of the issues are long-term planning, I see, like left wing and D. How does this draft class and that first, 45 players look for the depth of those two positions?
Yeah, so this is a defensive light class. So it's, you know, there's Jamie Drysdale, who is by far the top defensive prospect. And then you slide down, you're looking at Jake Sanderson, who's a very nice left shot D, but those guys are going to be long gone. A kid I like a lot is Emile Andre. He plays the game similar to Quinn Hughes. He's a left shot kid, 5'9", 185 pounds. You know, I've got him in my top 15 because of the way he skates and sees the play, and he's so shifty and offensive. There are scouts and public rankings that have him in the 50s and 60s sort of thing. So that's an interesting player that I think that if they could get themselves back into the second round or peel off a late first or something like that, that they could have a look at him. I think that'd be a very interesting player for them. Left wing, again, it's similar. It's funny. There's a lot of right wings, a lot of centers in this. You know, you're looking at Rodion Amarov, who's the top Russian in this class, and, arguably one of the top left wingers too. But again, probably going to be gone by the time the Canucks are picking. And then you're looking. This is an interesting class because the top, 10, 12 players are very, very strong. Like, it is a very deep top 12 where you could arguably see six or seven of them in the NHL next year and, all 10 or 12 of them being stars in four or five seasons. After that, though, when you're getting into that 15 to, 50 range, it's a bit of a mixed bag, and I think that every team's list is going to be wildly different from the next. So someone that, the Canucks might have at 20 could be 80 on someone else's board. So there's going to be a lot of opportunities for teams to really hone in on the skill sets that they perceive as what will translate best, and every team's going to have a little different look at that, and we'll have another one of those drafts where the GMs are going to be talking about, like, oh, we got the guy who's top on our board again, we're so pleased to get him, couldn't believe he was there, sort of thing. A kid like Brendan Breeson, who's a really nice left winger out of the USHL, I've seen him ranked all over the place, 21, 101, 65, sort of thing. So there's going to be some options for them, especially if they can get themselves some additional picks here, or if, they end up getting that 2021st back. There's always going to be some fun picks here. It's not as deep as a lot of people thought with the depth running into the third and fourth rounds. It's really top heavy this class, but I do think there's a lot of interesting players still.
If and when we get a draft, of course, we'll figure out when that is. Hey, Cam, a welcome distraction for a lot of our hockey fans going through all of the real life things that you and your family are going through. Stay healthy, keep yours and those close to you healthy as well. Thank you very much for doing this.
Yeah, thanks a lot, fellas. You stay healthy out there too.
We will do our best. That is Cam Robinson, one of our prospects guys, one of our main guys we go to here on Sportsnet 650. Bick, you got a little more work going on this afternoon. You got to line up a show for the program.
Yeah, for sure. 4 to 7, me, Sat, and Andrew Walker will be broadcasting live from our respective homes. It's a Wednesday, so Patrick Johnson's going to be joining us in his quarantine state as well. And also Mark Schofield is going to be joining us. Tom Brady moves. We talk about the guy from Boston who does a great job breaking down quarterbacks. What the fit could look like in Tampa Bay for Tom Brady.
Excellent stuff, Bic. Thanks for doing this, buddy. We'll reconnect tomorrow. We'll make this work.
Can't wait.
That is Bic Nizar, part of the program this afternoon. He'll chime in there. He'll set that show up. Coming up next for you, Reach Deep. Shane O'Brien weighs in. If there's anybody who can figure out stuff to do and has interest outside of hockey, Shane O'Brien might be the guy. He probably has a bunch of stuff to do. You can hear that interview coming up next with Dan Riccio and Randeep Janda. Thank you very much for joining not only Canuck Central, but the Scott Rintoul Show as well. I'm back on the air from my quote-unquote home studio tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. We will talk to you then. Enjoy the rest of your day. Keep yourselves healthy. Reach Deep is up next right here on Sportsnet 650.